It's, as you'll appreciate, really hard to get the timing of these events right. We're about a quarter of an hour over our budgeted time, so we've alerted our kids team that there may be a little bit of slippage. They're incredibly gracious, but I'm going to do my best to make sure we're not too late in finishing. And just to help us on our way, we're not going to have somebody read our two passages of Scripture. Well, those will be sent out in the week. They're from Matthew 6 and Matthew 16. And the two key phrases that I just want to peg as overviews for us as we look ahead are these. Jesus saying to the disciples, I will build my church. And also saying, you seek first the kingdom. Okay, so those are the two things that Jesus said, the two of the jobs he gave. He said he was to do something, which is to build his church, and we, his followers, are to seek his kingdom. It's long been said over recent years that the local church is the hope of the world. It is God's design for bringing peace and transformation and salvation to the world in which we live. There is no other vehicle, really, other than the one Jesus left on earth, which is you and me, his people, as we gather locally to worship and to work for him and for his kingdom. And God is constantly in the business of reforming and reshaping his church, reawakening it to be fit for purpose. And I want briefly to set our story within the context of what we see God doing globally in his church. I don't mean every church, but certainly churches like ours. And we're going to have these on the screen. And I just want to talk very briefly to them. And there is inevitably going to be too much information in what follows. We are videoing it. I ought to stand a bit more still than I am doing. We are videoing it, as we did with Dave's finances. So if you want to watch it again, I'm sure you could always, if you don't want to actually watch me, you could just listen to it with your eyes closed. But it may take one or two listenings to get used to it. But if you can, think of these shifts. And I think you'll see that a lot of what I'm about to say about what has been happening, what God has enabled us to do, and what lies ahead is in response to what God is doing, not just here, but in so many places around the world. The key shift is focus. Certainly in my childhood, the focus of the church was itself. I'm not being rude, that was simply the way it was. I can barely remember any talk in my childhood about mission or about the world beyond. The focus was on the church. Increasingly, the focus is on the kingdom. And that releases a whole different way of thinking. Certainly in terms of the way that you think of people, no longer as yours, but as belonging to the vineyard. And if God calls them on into fresh pastures, you open your hands, you bless, and you release. And we're going to see how that's worked out in our life shortly. Kingdom leads to a contrast between where all the energy was brought in to sustain the life of the church and bless Nelly, the rotors. But actually, energy is now out. How can we equip, nurture, and release you as God's people to take Jesus, to be Jesus in your places this time tomorrow? It means a fundamental shift in attitude. Church can no longer be governed by what suits me, but has to be governed according to the needs of those beyond our walls. If what we do inside these walls does not reach out to those beyond, it is not fit for purpose. I've told this story before, but it'll maybe lighten things a little bit. The person leaving church and saying to the vicar, I couldn't stand the worship this morning. The vicar, thankfully thinking quickly, said, just as well it wasn't for you then. You know, we must escape the bonds of thinking that this is for us. First and foremost, it's for him. And secondly, it's for them. So it's no longer a place of retreat from a dark and dreadful world, but a people of rescue sent out into the world which God made and for which Christ died and upon which Jesus poured out his Spirit. This one can trip us up, so let me be careful. In my introduction to my Christian journey at the age of 14, largely I understood my work to be just saving souls. Now, we love saving souls. We love seeing souls saved. We want people to come to faith in Jesus. But actually, we're called to shape culture. not simply to pluck individuals out of it. You are called, said Jesus, to be salt and light. Both are indispensable in their way. And that is the difference Christians are called to make in the world to which we're sent. Again, in the early days of the church, it was mainly about program. It's increasingly about presence. God will bless our programs because he's that sort of God. But what he really wants is a place that will host his presence. And we have a number of testimonies here. I won't embarrass. Well, I'm going to, because she did it publicly last week, Margot on Easter Day, giving her testimony. Margot didn't come to church because of Alpha or anything that we did, but walking across the downs and just hearing a voice she knew to be God's calling her home. Now, there are a number of people sitting in front of me today, and there would be more if we had the whole church family gathered. There'll be more at the five, particularly we're seeing it among some students, who God is just calling home without program, but because of his presence. And we believe that one of the reasons we and other churches across Bristol are being, people are being drawn to us is because we're willing to make the presence of God a priority so that people can meet him. I was trained as a vicar to be self-reliant. I'm your classic Anglican vicar, if you can believe it. You know, early 20s, Oxbridge educated, single, white, male. The classic choice in those days, back in the day. And I was chosen probably because they thought that I would lead things according, you know, and actually unworking that self-reliance to be reliant on the Spirit. It's one of the reasons I've appreciated Sian so much is because she, along with others, has constantly said, okay, we've got our God-given reason, but what is the Spirit of God saying to us? An attitude to mission that was, here I am, Lord, send her. the idea that mission was propelling the few willing into the dark corners of the continents of the world and supporting them. I'm not knocking that. It's an amazing thing to have done. But it is a radically different way of thinking of yourself, that mission is not about sending somebody who is specifically called to go there, as to think, I am called and sent to go here, to the office, to the place of learning, and all of it. Here I am, Lord. A place where the staff do everything, that was often the clergy, to an army equipped for service. I mean, if it is only the vicar doing everything, God help the church and the world. Let's be honest. Where the idea was almost like a consumer to a place of ownership. And if I'm honest, I think, you know, that sense of ownership we need to work on as a church. I'm not saying everybody who comes as a consumer. But I'm not sure that we yet have the depth of ownership to really understand all of us. This is our church. This is my family. The person I sit next to is mine and I am theirs. Pretense authenticity probably speaks for itself. If it doesn't, you need to talk to me afterwards. A whole thing about closed and open. You know, we're going to talk about releasing people. And actually, I remember being ordained into a culture where actually churches were almost competitors. And now we bless one another. You know, when St. Nick's is relaunched, we rejoice because a church that was redundant is now full of life. When Andy and Emma moved to Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston, things begin to happen. It's not that things didn't happen, but you know what I mean. We release. We become risk-taking rather than risk-averse. We talk about the impossible rather than settling for the possible. We become people who are willing to release rather than wanting to control it humanly. We measure success not by our numbers or what happens in here, but by the impact we have for the kingdom beyond. We see church, our small community, what this thing we call faith, not as events we attend, but as life done together. So church which was static becomes a movement which is dynamic. And finally, there's been so much theology over the last 50 years or so of the church in wilderness, the church in exile. And I know there was grounds for that. But actually it was a real poverty mentality. We're stuck in the wilderness. We're out in exile, to use those two great images from the Old Testament. But actually increasingly churches are getting the sense of being called into the promised land of rebuilding the city. So having set that as a a thing. Let me just talk as briefly as I can. Last year at this meeting, we launched our vision. And if you either did not pick up one because you've joined since then or you've lost it and would like a hard copy, they are available at the end. But they can also be downloaded from the website. We asked some key questions, why, how, and what, and I'm not going to rehearse them at length, but simply the question, why are we here? And this isn't just Christchurch, it's every church. The church exists to save the world. One person, one city, one nation at a time. The church exists to change the world. And we use this journey that's actually, thanks to Mark Orris, now on these pull-ups here, that little journey, if you look at those six phrases, I'm not going to rehearse them, you've heard them so many times, but that journey from meeting God to transforming culture, if we use those words, if we evaluate ourselves and our ministries by those words, it means that our faith cannot become inward-looking because it's always on a journey outwards towards others. We talked about our hearts, a heart for the individual, a heart for the city, a heart for the nations. And the more that we thought about those as a leadership, the more we recognize them as values. Not just nice sounding words that stay in a brochure, but actually activities in which we get engaged. And we identified three strategic objectives for this and next year, 2018, 2019, possibly into 2020. Small communities, leadership development, and wholeness. And I'm going to invite Neil very briefly to talk about those first two before I continue.
Brilliant. Ian, could you just flick up that communities? Brilliant. Thank you. So community is part of that journey, part of the way that God is leading us. It's integral to what we are and who we are. It's the place that we learn to connect, to grow, and to influence. And as a church our size, it's important that we know that to be the place of family. And so I just want to briefly just say what we've been doing so far, where we're at, and what's going next, and how that fits with leadership. So the story so far, as of this month, we have 34 small communities operating across the church. We have 385 people on our church suite database that are saying that they're a member of a small community, which is 40% of the membership. That's lower than it actually is because some of those people are not even in Bristol. So it's more than 40% in small communities. But that's a growing number of people. We've had people joining small communities over this last year as we've spent time, which represents 27 leaders of small communities. That doesn't include emerging leaders who are taking responsibility in different ways for their small communities as well. So 27 named leaders of those communities. It's an amazing and exciting opportunity and place of growth and learning. And much of that has been done in hidden so far. But these are some of the things that are coming out, and you'll see it in our annual report, but we're beginning to socialize together outside of the actual small community meeting time. Small communities are a place they feel safe. We've had members join us over the last year that have found a sense of family, empowered to step out in faith. These are all phrases that our small community leaders have used about what they're seeing happening in their small communities. Many already volunteering in the community are coming to understand that this is not separate from their faith walk, but a part of releasing their purpose. It's an exciting opportunity. It's an exciting place, but there is so much more. There are other small communities that need to be drawn into this. And really, it's about investing in leaders. So the question, what's next for our small communities? An opportunity for each and every one of us to be a part of one. An opportunity and a space for that to happen, which means we need to multiply our small communities. It means that we need to increase more leaders. It means that we need to have opportunities in different places and at different times to do that. I look around the room and I've had conversations with people and ongoing conversations with people who want to be a part of a community, and we haven't yet been able to do that yet. We are still working on it, but the way that we're going to do that is to increase the capacity of our small communities. And one way that we're going to do that, which we've been working with our small community leaders, is what we call mid-sized communities, an opportunity to multiply our communities in a way that allows support and strengthening of leadership. It's bringing together or multiplying existing communities around leaders and leadership. The best example, the most visible example that we have at the moment is our Tuesday community. A community that meets on a larger scale once a month, but meet in their small communities in the home the rest of the month as well. But it's not just about an event on a day, but it's about their lives shared together. And we're developing these. And again, we can talk a little bit about just six examples or five examples and a question mark, because where does you fit into that? So we're developing a mid-sized community that's based around South Bristol and two small communities that are in South Bristol. We've got some small communities that meet in northwest Bristol and bringing them together and supporting each other in that. We've got the Tuesday community that already exists and how that continues to develop and grow. We've got a small community that is looking to multiply, that has a real focus on social justice. Doesn't mean that the others can't, but that's their emphasis. And looking to multiply that and multiply leaders through that so there is more opportunity to get involved. There's one that I'm looking at and trying to think about, and I've been spending some time with some people to think about, which I'm calling at the moment Thursday community, but it's an opportunity for a community that perhaps meets in this space a little bit like Tuesday community, but not necessarily 20s and 30s. It may be that we bring some small groups who already exist together to think about how new people can join and get involved in that as well. Again, that's something that if you're interested in any of these, come and talk to me. And then a question mark. What's your heart passion? What's your vision? Who are you called to reach? Community is not about just having Bible study. Community is about shared life together that includes others that are not already part of our community. So where are you being called to get involved? Is it the workplace? Is it a particular age group? Is it a particular area or demographic? Is it a particular people group who are in need? Come and talk to me if that's... We're going to do more on this in the future, a little bit more explanation of how mid-sized communities might work. But these are the opportunities to step into as we continue to develop our communities.
Thanks, Neil, very much indeed. One of the things that we recognised was a need to address and reinvigorate our prayer life as a church. And so over the past year, if you're not aware of this, we relaunched our monthly prayer meeting. Normally happens on the first Monday of every month. The next one is actually the 13th of May because the 6th is a bank holiday. We've introduced termly half nights of prayer, and the next one will be notified shortly. We started a new Thursday morning prayer for Heart for the City that goes alongside our Saturday morning Heart for the Nations prayer meeting. And we've tried different ways of introducing corporate prayer into our Sunday gatherings. I want to talk very briefly about a couple of the hearts, really, Heart for the City and a Heart for the Nations, as briefly as I may. One of the desires we have as a leadership and as a people here is to be a blessing to our community and to our city. We've welcomed the invitation of our elected mayor, Marvin, to, along with many other churches and other faith groups, to get more involved in issues of social justice and where there are needs in the city. Can I just make one very thing plain? Somebody said to me recently that they were a bit worried that my support for Marvin meant that you could only come to Christchurch if you were prepared to vote Labour. And I just want to make clear that's absolutely not the case. In fact, you can't have listened to Marvin very much if you hear that, because actually he quite often calls out some of the dangers within the present Labour movement. And if he had the means, I think he would be an independent candidate, but because he doesn't, he needs a party to support him. So please don't be under any illusions about that. We have a man of God in a position of authority and power and influence who is seeking to enable churches to build the kingdom with others who have a kingdom passion. So it's as simple, really, as that. We've gladly accepted the invitation from our central diocese to explore the possibility of ourselves becoming a resourcing church. So the pattern within the Church of England and the process of putting in two normally, so we've got one here in St. Nick's here in Bristol and one in Swindon, led by a couple who used to be on our staff team in Coombe Down, so it's great to have them in the diocese again. And then the pattern is that other churches capable of being resource churches and planting are invited to do so, and we're one of the first to do that, so we're exploring what that means. And actually, we're beginning to think that that may be part of the reason why we have not been yet able to appoint an associate vicar. And although I'm not going to go into details today and can't really share a great deal, we are actually in quite a creative dialogue with the centre of our diocese about how that particular post might be used for church planting and resourcing new life across the city. So we're very excited about those possibilities. We have three key areas in our heart for the city. The first is our link with Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston. And just before Christmas, we commissioned the Marriott family and the O'Connors to leave Christchurch and to move and to start supporting the work, the Marriotts in Avonmouth and the O'Connors in Lawrence Weston. Sorry, I almost ran out of steam. And they've each done a little video for us, which we're going to watch. It's going to be great just to see them and hear what God's doing.
Junior Patrick, it's been great to welcome you into the life of St. Peter's Church over these past months and years for Ginny. And tell us a little bit about your story of how you've ended up there, what's been going well, what God's been doing, and things you can ask the congregation at Christchurch to pray for you.
I think, well, I've been at St. Peter's since Andy and Emma were called to that area, and I've been dipping my toe in for the last 3 years, but I've been helping with toddlers, and that has been really exciting and a real place to connect with the locality. And I've also been involved with a cookery course with people in the locality and through the food bank. And I'm about to start doing a parenting course with families, a course called Kids Matter. Mm-hmm. So my involvement is very practical and with lots of families. But Patrick's involvement has been very different.
Yeah, I've been going for 6 months. I've been spending time getting to know people. I've been welcomed incredibly well.
Well, we both have.
And it's well. It's just been a joy to be part of that little congregation. I have found a way to serve. More recently, I have just been appointed to the PCC, which is a great joy, and I'm looking forward to that. But it's been very slowly. It's been about building relationships and getting to know what's going on in the church, and a lot of really faithful people who have been serving that congregation. And the exciting thing for the future, for this year, we've got the Eden Partnership coming down to visit us and probably putting people into the community and the church, and that's going to be very exciting to see how that works through. So things
I think
for prayer.
I think that that relationships would go deeper with those that we know already, and that we would meet new people, particularly for me, mums and families, mums to know who to invite to the Kids Matter course. I'm doing that with Rachel Marriott, which is really exciting. So I think that relationships go deeper and that we're open to making new ones.
Yeah, and for me to find my role on the PCC and more broadly in the church, it would be great to have prayer for that. Thank you.
That's brilliant. Thank you both. So, Rachel, it's been great to have you here for the past 4 months. Can you tell us just a tiny bit about your story and what's been going on here?
Well, if you'd asked me a year ago where I was going to be, I wouldn't have said here. We've been at Christchurch for a long time, but gradually over the last couple of years we felt called for something different. There was going to be change, and then just in the autumn last year it felt the right thing to do to come here. And so since January I've been children's and youth pastor here at Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston, and being involved with the school work, going into do assemblies and being involved with Sunday morning worship, and building up what has been started here amongst the children's work. And going forwards, after Easter, we're starting a toddler group. We haven't got one yet, so that's the next part of the process, starting that somewhere for people to come. The church will be open, and we're really excited about who'll be coming and who'll be involved with that.
That's great, Rachel. So how can we pray for you in these coming months for both you and the wider family?
So it's a continuing process of settling somewhere new for all of us, making new friends, new connections with people, and just continuing to seek out what God's will is for us here as a family. And also in the day-to-day of working with different people, and for more people to come. That's what we want, to just grow God's ministry here, and to reach out to the local community.
These are people who've responded to what God has been saying and taken the sacrificial choice of leaving a place of comfort and familiarity and going to work alongside the Voice. If you didn't recognise it, Andy used to be our curate here before Neil, and he and Emma now head up the work at Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston. And when Andy was appointed, he and I knew that the work there would never be, our link would never be a sort of church plant, but rather individuals and couples and families sensing the call. And actually, timely, I'm going to invite Ben and Kerry forward because they've also recently heard the same call. And again, as I've often said before, you know, the human heart just think, oh, not Ben and Kerry and Lizzie and James. And yet, on the other hand, here are people who are hearing what God is saying. So here's little James. And we've got a microphone somewhere. Neil, can I just have that? And I know you know you need to be brief, but just tell us so we can pray for you, because it's all part of the same call of God.
Tell you.
Tell everybody.
Well, so since Andy and Emma moved to the other church, we have been thinking occasionally on and off whether we would go with them. At the time, it didn't feel like the right time, but over the last few months, we felt we wanted to explore that a bit more. Seriously, so we've been going there every other week, and now we just feel like it's the right time to go and get involved. Basically, that's it.
So just prayer really for the move. We've been here for nearly 9 years now, so just pray that God will use us there, and like Ginny was saying, building relationships and things with people there as well.
Thank you. Ben and Kerry's first Sunday at Christchurch Clifton was actually our first Sunday as well. So it's quite a wrench to see you two go. There's been so much speaking in words there. What I'm going to suggest, Jackie, would you take Ben and Kerry just into the middle? And rather than me pray yet again, I'm just going to invite you as a church family just to pray quietly for Ben and Kerry, their prayer particularly for settling, not just for James, but for Lizzie, who's downstairs. We heard Patrick and Ginny's request for that prayer for deeper relationships, and of course for Patrick in his role on PCC, and for Rachel with the girls Hannah and Ella, and of course husband Adam. So let's all just pray quietly for them all. Thank you, Lord, that even at a time of parting, we remain brothers and sisters, part of one family, part of your great work in this wonderful world. And although we are sad at the thought of seeing Ben and Kerry, Lizzie and James move on, we also rejoice that you have spoken. And because we know that you've spoken and called, we know that you will equip and that you'll use them to bless the people of Avonmouth and Lawrence Weston. And so in the name of Jesus, we commission you and we bless you and we send you out with our love and our gratitude for all that you have brought here over the past 9 years. In Jesus' name, amen. I think another round of applause is in order. Let me just talk a little bit more about our family life. We already do so much. We run a preschool downstairs, as many will know. We hosted the light party, as always, last year with over 200 children, 40 volunteers. We welcome an average of 55 families, which means around 70 to 80 young children to toddlers, week by week. We've launched a Monday morning toddlers in the Spire with between 8 and 15 families with children attending. We've expanded the Christmas experience with more schools and over 300 year three school children attending. We welcomed over 200 children from year six to the Easter experience as they took a look at the Easter story. We run a weekly children's choir for the community with up to 40 children coming week by week. And we run the marriage course, marriage prep and mentoring the Abels heading up the Relationship Academy across the city, parenting and so on. And just two new things that I want to bring to your attention. Jan Tyrrell, who is at the back, and Emily Shano and Ruthie have sensed God's call for us as a church to begin to address, starting small, some of the critical mental health issues in local schools. Some of you may not be aware, but even in primary schools. And the Christian church has traditionally been very good at crisis response, critical intervention where there's been need. And of course, we want to keep on doing that. But actually, we want to be making a difference now so that future generations don't suffer the same crises. So we're partnering with a national charity, Transforming Lives for Good, being involved, as Ginny was talking about, with Kids Matter. And Emily has offered 15 hours a week to us as a church family to begin building and building on those relationships with schools that Jane Gillis started and that we have through the Christmas and Easter experiences. So I can't give you too many details today, but you'll be hearing more about that. Jan, just give us a wave, Jan, at the back if you want to talk more about that, because I know Emily's downstairs with the kids. But if you'd like to learn more, do go there. Let me move on and bring us to a close by talking about what all this means. Clearly, we've already seen with the Nias family that sense of change and what God is calling, but also as a church leadership, we see change coming. We see a change to the way that we lead our 10 and our 5 gathering. Neil and Natalie are going to build a team that will oversee this gathering. Chris Whitwell will do similar for the 5. As we see new leaders emerging, we want to release them and nurture them and equip them. And so Sophie Brown is going to be heading up the sung worship aspect of the 10, and Julia Lovelace doing the same at the 5. Ruthie's role needs to change as she senses God's call to that deep family need in our culture. And the PCC is going to be looking at funding extra support for her to enable her to do that alongside Emily and Jan. And it means changes too for our building. We've already heard about phase one, which was putting in the Spire coffee shop. We've doubled the number of regulars using the Spire over the last year. We invited 1,600 people from our community and across the city into our Christmas market in November. And if you come in on a Tuesday morning, you'll find dear Pat Simmons and a group of international students that's grown and grown. And now with Martin and Joy's help, who have qualifications in English as a foreign language, helping international students and their families learn the language and hear more about our hope for them. And so I want to finish by landing on our building project, because a building project is never the vision. A building project serves the vision. And with all these things happening in the life of our church, and particularly with the way that our crypt is used, it is now time really to push ahead with the refurbishment of the crypt. If you're a member of the church family, you'll be aware we've had a long delay, mainly due to pre-planning and the delays with our city council, their planning and conservation officers. And although we're at a stage where we can make a planning application, we will need to make a robust case for the work we want to do downstairs and stretching out. So let me just remind you, I've got some images to show. Where's my clicker? Gone. Thanks, Neil. So all these are in very large on the side, and members of the Renew team, who I'll be identifying in a minute, will be able to talk you through it. So if you look from bottom to top, the bottom is that side of the church, and the top, which is a sort of pinky salmon, is that. And it's the pinky salmon that is the new build at crypt level out towards that road. Does that make sense? And then there's reconfigurations at that end, there's a new kitchen, and there's a complete refurbishment of preschool and so on. So this is how it would look from across the road. So if you're standing over there looking this way, this is what you'll see at that level. Rather than just the single entrance at this end, at the left end, and a fire escape, the glass won't be blue. It's just done like that to make it obvious what is the new build. Actually, if we did it without that, it would be quite difficult to make it out, which is part of the reasoning. So that's looking down from above on the roof. And that's how it will look. So actually, within the scale of Christchurch, it's a fairly minimal intervention, but it will have a significant impact, both in terms of introducing light and air and enabling all the activities and more to flourish and to grow and to develop. It's a slightly more close-up version of it. And then just some 3D wire drawings that help the architects do their work. So again, if you were on a drone going up this road that way, this is what you would see. And again, if you are looking down from the big houses over there. So actually, you can see that it's wrapped around. It's still clothed in its green, its grass, and it's wrapped around on either end. And I think that's the final one. Okay, folks, we're very nearly done. So we've set up, as a PCC, we've set up what's called a Renew Client team to guide it through the project. This team reports to the PCC. And I'm going to invite team members to stand as I call their names if they're here. The group is chaired by Mike Innes. Oh, Mike's had to go. Sorry. I'm on it as well, so I'm standing. That's fine. Mark Parsons, Paddy Sykes, Simon Highgate, and Jan Tyrrell. Thank you. And they will be over in this part of the church with those plans afterwards, if you would like to go and talk to them. And of course, they're supported by a professional team of architects and surveyors. And we expect that team to grow further as more skills are required. So what happens next? A formal application for planning permission will go in early next month. This can be a long process, but we are hoping to get permission and approval by the summer. At the same stage, we also have to go through our diocesan planning approval stage, and that will happen at the same time. Over the next few months, we'll be developing our fundraising strategy to start the process of raising the necessary money. Our surveyors estimate that the whole project can be achieved within £2 million, which sounds a huge amount of money. But we already have £666,662. I wish there was another £4 in there. My tidy mind would like that. But we already have that, as Dave was saying, in our designated fund for this project. Subject to planning permissions from both diocese and city council, and subject to our achieving the necessary raising of money, we would hope to start work in January 2020. So that's our hoped-for budget. That's our hoped-for timeline, and it is all to serve the vision that I've been talking about this morning. So year by year, I grow more excited to be the vicar of this church. I grow more excited to be part of the leadership that is listening to God, hearing his voice, allowing him to draw us step by step into the future that he has for us, to see the kingdom come, to see the nations transformed, to see the city rebuilt, to see individuals being made whole, changing the world, one person, one city, one nation at a time. Will you stand with me as we draw to a close?